Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
Employees, the safety of its players as the number one priority. And this is just another example of that. I've talked to strength coaches who have guys who come to my facility. I've been in some of these virtual meetings and speaking to different DBs on different NFL teams. And I think that some of these strength coaches, some of these position coaches are really relishing in the opportunity to teach their players and be connected with their players in this way. And it's an ever evolving process. I think many teams are doing a great job with it, but I especially think the NFL is leading the way by making the decisions in the right manner to continue this process going forward. And so for me, I always expected it to last the entire offseason. I think a guy and a head coach like Sean Payton was kind of ahead of the curve and saying, you know what, guys, you make sure you are prepared to play when we can have you back in the facility once training camp starts. And I think that we are moving closer and closer to that being the case for all 32 teams in the NFL.
But Ryan, what about the point that Dan just made that maybe not all teams will open at the same time in terms of their facilities? Like, we heard Mike Tomlin say he believes until every team is ready to be back, no team should be back. What do you think about that and the advantage of that?
You know what? I agree with Coach Tomlin from that standpoint, but I think this thing is so, and COVID is so unpredictable right now that the NFL is trying to move in the best way for all teams. And I believe allowing players to go back into facilities before other teams can do that would be a distinct advantage, but necessarily just the staff and the coaches, I don't necessarily know how much of an advantage that would give teams. And I think the NFL wants to show people that they are progressing towards having games in September.
Yep. Adapt and change is going to be
the key. I think it's important to understand,
ahead,
I'm sorry, Susie, that while we might all want Mike Tomlin's desires to be the case, right? We might all want the competitive fairness protected. That may not end up being the top priority. You may be in a situation where there are imperfect solutions here. Project ahead to September. You could conceivably be in a situation where some teams can play home games in their regular stadiums and other teams can't because of rules that are in place in different places. So I think people have to be ready for the possibility that, the level playing field, which is such a priority for the NFL and all these other sports leagues in normal times, may not be attainable or even the highest priority as we work through these other more serious issues.
Yeah, I think to both of you guys' point, it's very poignant that you made. Another thing I would say, federal, state, and local levels. Arizona just opened up. They'll be opening up soon to all of their professional sports teams. So it's one of those things where you have differing circumstances. We talked about it today a little bit about college football. What if some states are open, some states are closed? So the NFL in uniformity is going to have to make a decision based on when they will allow teams to go back into their facilities, but that doesn't mean that those facilities won't be available to certain teams in certain states before others are. So it'll be interesting to see how they play that out and make that decision as well.
Bottom line, we all need to be ready for anything. On now to some unique insight on the ongoing saga of Dak Prescott's contract negotiations with some unique insight from someone who has been in this situation himself, the league's all-time leading rusher, Emmitt Smith. Smith had to hold out into the regular season before Jerry Jones and Smith's reps came to an agreement. Emmitt understands the biggest key in all of this: leverage.
No, I'm not surprised. And if you understand the business of leverage, when you have leverage, then you try to set the rules. And the only way you fight leverage is you fight it by establishing your grounds. And I think at some point this stuff will subside. Dak is not worried whether or not he's going to get signed. I'm not even concerned. I believe he will get it done. And I believe the Cowboys will get it done because we don't have room to be playing games and playing chicken.
A leveled response from Smith. If you recall, his leverage was that the Cowboys got off to an 0-2 start, They realized how much they needed him. Smith got what he wanted and became the league's highest paid running back. Dan, there's also that franchise tag deadline. But do you think it's possible the Cowboys would start the season without Dak?
No, I don't. Because I think ultimately, if they don't get a deal done, I think Dak Prescott would play on a $31.4 million franchise tag this year. I don't think that's the worst possible outcome for a player that was making $2 million, say, last season. I find it interesting to listen to Emmett because I remember last July, Emmett and Ezekiel Elliott went out to dinner shortly before Cowboys training camp, and Emmett counseled Ezekiel Elliott on the idea of leverage and what to do. And you remember, Ezekiel Elliott held out through all of training camp and ended up getting a deal. A little bit different scenario given where Dak is in his contract situation versus where Zeke was last year. And, of course, the difference in being a quarterback. But I do believe the worst-case scenario here is that Dak ends up playing this year on the franchise tag. And I think the far more likely scenario is that they work out a long-term deal before July 15th.
All I want to say is thank you, Emmett Smith. Emmett Smith ain't one of these dudes that held out, got his money because he held out, and is trying to tell everybody go play for Jerry. No, Emmett saying, this what I did, and that junk worked, and I think it might work in your case, so you should do it too. I love this by Emmett Smith. I love what Dak is doing. He's being quiet. He's not telling all his business. Everybody doesn't have to know whether he's going to sign the deal before the July 15th date. He's just moving along about his business and keeping it to himself. Dak Prescott does have the leverage. They believe that they are a team with an opportunity to win. They go out and they get Andy Dalton, but they know that Andy Dalton isn't their quarterback of the future. So for Dak Prescott, it is about making sure you get what you feel you are worth and under the best terms you can possibly do that. I think the Cowboys and I think Dak Prescott both believe that they will have something in place that allows Dak Prescott to start the season as their starting quarterback. So there is no rush. Let's get it done the right way. And I believe Dak Prescott is going about his business in the way that he should.
Yeah, Dak is going to get it one way or the other. Here's the thing for me, guys, and I know we've been talking about Dak Prescott's contract situation. I worry about the relationship. At some point, you don't want a disgruntled franchise quarterback. You don't want a guy that doesn't feel like, that feels like you thought that there was a better option, or he wasn't worth what he should have got in his mind or his agent's mind. Now, I get it. After the contract is signed, everybody is kumbaya. Both sides are happy. But with that being said, we've looked at a lot of moves transpire before Dak Prescott getting a deal done. And I will contest and continue to say that this is one of the most unprecedented franchise quarterback negotiations I've seen since I've been around the NFL and as a player, and now covering it for as long as we've been doing it. It's one of those things where you don't panic, because history tells us the expectation is to get this contract done. But history does not tell us about all of the moves that have transpired before this contract gets done. So I'm interested to see if my panic or patience, what the levels are for both of those things, because I think it's a little bit of both.
All right. We have to consider here, too, only three quarterbacks in NFL history have thrown for over 15,000 yards and 90 touchdowns in their first four seasons. Peyton Manning, Dan Marino, and Dak Prescott. Prescott has only thrown 36 interceptions in that span. His interception rate is nearly half of what Manning and Marino's were. The Cowboys no doubt appreciate all of that. Now that we're through free agency and the draft, our own Bill Barnwell has released his Winners and Losers of the NFL Offseason. Great read on ESPN.com. But before we get to that, Dan, as part of your own assignment for ESPN.com, you made a pretty bold prediction that you delivered yesterday. Let's remind everyone what you said.
My prediction was Jordan Love will win more Super Bowls with the Packers than Aaron Rodgers will end up winning. And that's, remember, this is Aaron Rodgers has one. So unless he wins one of the next, you know, two or three, all Jordan Love has to do is win two to make this prediction come true.
Yes, bold. Would you like to elaborate on that?
Yeah, it's bold. It's bold. Yeah. I mean, you know, we had to do it. It was a roundtable discussion. They asked us all for a bold prediction.
Is that
regarding
your elaboration?
Any pick from this year's draft. I could have said, oh, so-and-so will be the leading rookie rusher this year. I mean, it's boring. So bold, I went bold, and knowing this was a controversial pick, just thinking, hey, maybe the Packers, who do this very well, who draft well, who win a lot, maybe they're right about the guy. Maybe he wins a couple of Super Bowls. Bold prediction. Packer fans, I'm with you. I don't know why you're so mad at me.
I mean, it's super bold. It's super bold because what you're saying is he's going to win more than Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. He's also going to win more than Drew Brees has won. And this is a guy who everybody is saying is a project, and we were all just flabbergasted that they even moved up to draft him. And we are right now going to say he's going to win more Super Bowls than Aaron Rodgers. We were just talking about when cats get their second contract, you can't win Super Bowls. He ain't going to play for 2 or 3 years because Aaron Rodgers is going to play. He's not going to be on the field. I just don't know about this one, Dan. It's bold, and I've said some bold things on here, but this is one that if it happens, we are all going to have to bow down to you because you are a prophet, because this is difficult.
RC, I got to stay right there where you went with that what you just said. Oh, he's, listen, based on what everybody's saying, Jordan Love is definitely going to win more Super Bowls than Aaron Rodgers because he's not going to count for 15% of the salary cap. He is definitely going to win more Super Bowls. You know what else? You know why else Jordan Love is going to win more Super Bowls? Because he is the next Patrick Mahomes. He can throw with sidearm angles. He can throw over the top. He takes chances. He is unbelievable based on some of the draft experts. So, Dan G, that is not a bold prediction. He is the next Patrick Mahomes, and he is not going to account for 15% of the salary cap. So, you damn right he going to win 2 Super Bowls more than Aaron Rodgers. That's not a bold prediction, Dan. That's a great one.
I feel like Ryan, you just need one more comeback here.
Because for a little minute there, I thought Marcus was serious, and so I was really getting scared. But now I realize, you know what? He was listening to the Kuipers. He was listening to all the people, and so was Dan, obviously, because Jordan Love ain't going to win more Super Bowls in Green Bay than Aaron Rodgers.
They didn't ask for a safe prediction. Let me just say that. They didn't say one you feel fantastic about. They said bold, and I think I did it.
Exactly. All right, let's roll that into a
bold
play.
No, you won.
Let's
you won,
Dan G. Guys, let's roll that into bold. A play off of Bill Barnwell's winners, and I hate to call them losers. Let's call them not winners, with the focus on the quarterback. So based on what their teams did around them, which teams do you believe are losers in this offseason process? Ryan, you go first.
I'm going to go with the Packers right where we left off. Thank you, Dan. What a great segue. This is why Susie Colbert does TV. Because if you're the Packers and you know coming into this, you went to the NFC Championship, you have an opportunity to get back. You have an all-time great quarterback. You not only draft his successor, you move up in the draft to get him. And then everybody's like, no, but you got to wait. You can get good receivers in this draft late in the draft. They got 35 guys that are draftable. And then you don't even go get one of them. And you know who else is mad? Devontae Adams. He's over there screaming because he's going to be counting the people covering him just as he did a couple of years ago against the Bears because it's going to be 6 people on him because there's no one else to throw the football to.
I'm going to go the Houston Texans, and it's because I'm not going to get over the fact that Bill O'Brien traded away DeAndre Hopkins with a quarterback that's legitimately going to be one of the top guys in the league and a top 3 receiver in his prime. In his prime, Susie, you're so nice, and I love the fact that you don't want to call them losers, but the Houston Texans lost. They traded away one of the best players in the NFL to go to the West Coast and make Arizona better, and Bill O'Brien tried to sell us on the fact that give him time to wait and see. You know what you don't have in the NFL? Time to wait and see. When you got a good one, you better keep him. He had a great one in DeAndre Hopkins, and now he gone.
It's just that it's May. That's all. It's May. Dan, how about you?
He gone.
Susie, my pick is Mitch Trubisky. Look, they trade up to get him in the draft. All we've heard for 3 years is we're behind Mitch, we believe in Mitch, et cetera, et cetera. Now what happens? They trade for Nick Foles to compete for the starting job. They decline Trubisky's fifth-year option, so he's only under contract for one more year instead of two. It may be that he plays great and holds off Foles and gets a contract extension next year, but there's no doubt that the ground underneath Mitch Trubisky's feet in Chicago has gotten shakier this offseason.
Anytime you bring in competition for your quarterback, it's not great news. On the flip side, teams that stayed the course with their young quarterbacks. So, Ryan, who's a winner here?
Yeah. I'm going to go with Drew Locke. Hey, what does Drew Locke do when he throws a touchdown? He gets you with this, and he go on tighten that tie. Well, that's what he was doing in the offseason. They didn't bring in any competition after he finished strong last year. For some reason, the Raiders chose to go to other wide receiver from Alabama instead of Jerry Jeudy, so they got him in the first round. KJ Hamler from Penn State in the second, and from the national champion Louisiana State University Tigers, Lloyd Cushenberry in the third. Drew Locke is set up to be a star.
RC, I love that pick, but I'm going Miami Dolphins. They were bold in taking Tua Tagovailoa once everybody said he would not be healthy or durable. He's a baller, period. They signed Kyle Van Noy in the offseason, signed Byron Jones across from Xavier Howard, who is one of the top corners. Miami Dolphins are not playing. They are trying to win games. They won.
How about Kyler Murray, the Arizona quarterback? They go out and they get him. DeAndre Hopkins, maybe the best receiver in the entire league. You know, it's got me thinking, Susie. I'm thinking 2 years ago, a second-year quarterback comes out of nowhere, wins MVP, Patrick Mahomes. Last year, a second-year quarterback comes out of nowhere, wins MVP, Lamar Jackson. Could Kyler Murray continue that trend? If he can, DeAndre Hopkins could be a big reason why.
Yep, you drafted an offensive lineman. You got him a wide receiver and a running back.
This week, Dan.
You own it.
Yeah, Dan. That's what I'm talking about. Bold predictions everywhere.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers, always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with Geico on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Let's talk Falcons, who have revamped their roster after going 7-9 for the second straight season in 2019. The Falcons said goodbye to some familiar faces like Devontae Freeman, Austin Hooper, Vic Beasley, Devondre Campbell, Desmond Trufant. But they've added some serious talent to their new-look roster, headlined by Todd Gurley in the backfield, an edge rusher, Dante Fowler Jr., who signed a three-year deal worth up to $48 million. And with the 16th overall pick, Atlanta selected Clemson cornerback A.J. Terrell, who picked off five passes over the last two seasons. And then there is this. The Falcons' projected starting offense now features 10 players who were once first-round draft picks, including six-time Pro Bowl center Alex Mack. Hi, Alex.
Thanks for having me on.
We just learned today that the NFL is pushing back the virtual offseason through the end of May. So what do you think the impact will be? How does this affect you guys?
I just heard of that, I think, a couple seconds when you told me. But I think we were supposed to have like 3 weeks of OT or like virtual offseason, have a week off, and we're supposed to get back into it and continue the virtual meetings and stuff. If it pushed back a little bit, I think it gives us a little time on the back end, maybe, to, if things clear up, be able to get there in person. But I know it's tough for everybody. Coaches are having a difficult time figuring out virtual stuff. I know players are scrambling everywhere. The whole planet's really scrambling everywhere for workout equipment.
How much do you feel like you're really accomplishing with these virtual meetings?
I like it. As an older vet, it works out really well for me. I mean, I've installed a lot of different offenses, so it's really like three people kind of size meetings of what we're doing. And so I can be with my coach, look at film, be with some younger guys, kind of go over what we're doing, what we're talking about. And I can really use my time really well. And then I have my own workout time, do my own thing, and take as much time as I want. So I'm making good use of this offseason.
So you mentioned two things, that you're a seasoned veteran and the young guys. This is going to be your 12th season. The team drafted a center in the third round. Like, this kind of thing gets a lot of play with the quarterbacks. But what's your philosophy on mentoring?
Luckily, there's like five positions offensive line they can play. There's only one quarterback. So for the guy coming up, whether or not he's going to be a center down the road, you know, this year, next year, whatever happens, I can't really control much of that. But if he's going to be playing in there at guard, being a swing guy, I'm whatever the case is, I'm happy to help him.
And what's the key? Like, how do you? What's the key to helping these guys, these rookies? They've never been with your program, and now nobody can get their hands on them. How are you helping?
I mean, texting, whatever they have questions, I've told them to, like, text me anything you got. We will do virtual meetings. We will have stuff. When we do those one-on-one things right now, we're with the last year's rookies, or I am, and I can be there and watch film with them. If they have questions, I can bring up things that I see or don't see and kind of try to coach as much as you can. The hardest thing with this whole virtual offseason is it's tough on the youngest guys. You know, I've learned the offense before. I've done it before. I know how to work out on my own. When you have young guys, they're going to have a lot harder time learning everything, going and being in meetings and missing that kind of very one-on-one time with coaches, with the other guys. And it's tough on the youngest guys in the room.
So you mentioned being able to stay in shape, doing your own thing. We hear you have a pretty good setup. We're going to roll in some shots. Want to tell us about it?
Yeah, as soon as this kicked off, I'm in California. So as soon as it kicked off with the quarantine, I started trying to source as much workout equipment as I could, because I could see the writing on the wall about building your own home gym. So kind of try to put together the best I could in my garage. Car is banished to the street, and I'm doing the best I can with the space I got.
So also, and we want to bring in Ryan for this part of the interview, because we understand in an interview that you did with The Athletic that, Ryan, big foodie here, that you revealed you have become an accidental baker. How did that happen?
It was no accident, but it was something I knew I wanted to get into. I have a lot of time in the off season, and so if I have a lot of time around the house, I wanted to get and make the time productive. So I started making some bread. And the accidental part was I accidentally bought a 50-pound bag of flour when I should have brought like 5 pounds.
So there's been a lot of pizza.
Hey, so Alex, so here's my thing, man. Yeah, absolutely. Alex, here's my thing. I'm a skinny guy, man. I'm a DB, but I feel like I'm an O lineman at heart when it comes to food. So during this quarantine, I've started snacks over everything. I'm eating honey buns, oatmeal pies, ooey gooey cakes, lemon cakes. Listen, we gotta amp this thing up, bro. If you got all that flour, you need to get me some cakes done, some cinnamon rolls. Listen, I'll give you the shipping address. What is your favorite thing to bake now that you have all this time?
So far, I've just learned how to make bread. I've just been doing pizzas and breads and different things like that. And it's been pretty fun. I got some just a helpful loaf right here. This was this morning's project. Looks pretty good. I don't know. Good. And then, like,
hey,
you can't just make a little
hey,
bit
Alex,
of bread.
You gotta Alex,
make
listen, you got to start loaves. Adding some sugar, bro.
You can do that. I'm not trying to be – I'm going to try to eat myself out of a job here. I'm just trying to – have some fun in the offseason.
Yes, Key, remember, Ryan, you are retired. He is still trying to keep his job.
This was the 50-pound bag.
This is very true. This
oh
is very true.
Oh, my gosh.
We still have a lot left.
Awesome, though, that it hasn't gone to waste. All right.
My time well.
When we wrap up, I'll send you my address, too. You can ship us both something. Thank you, Alex. Great to see you. Good luck with the rest of this offseason.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me on.
New on NFL Live, the Rams have released their new uniforms. All white, all royal blue, and blue and yellow. Rams players tweeting out their approval with lots of fire emojis. Looking good. 2020 fantasy football rankings are set following the NFL draft. But let's look at the wide receiver rankings set by six ESPN fantasy experts. Michael Thomas is the unanimous number one receiver following a dominant season in which he led the NFL with 149 catches and 1,725 receiving yards. DeAndre Hopkins comes in at number two following his move from the Texans to the Cardinals. He was fourth in fantasy points per game by a wide receiver last year. Third is Devontae Adams. The Packers chose not to add a wide receiver in the draft, which should help Adams dominate targets from Aaron Rodgers again in 2020. Julio Jones is number four after another top five fantasy season. Jones has had six straight seasons with at least 1,394 receiving yards and is primed for another big season with Matt Ryan. And Tyreek Hill comes in as the number five receiver. Hill and his quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, both missed time with injury last year. If both are healthy, Hill should approach his 2018 numbers. Highlighting the next group of wide receivers are a pair of Buccaneers, Chris Godwin, who comes in at six, Mike Evans at eight. Now, here's Matthew Berry and Daniel Dopp from the Fantasy Show on ESPN Plus with more on the Bucs and what their new quarterback means for their offense from a fantasy perspective.
Tom Brady is going to wind up as a Tampa Bay Buccaneer.
It honestly feels like a perfect marriage.
The Patriots have traded Rob Gronkowski to the Bucs.
The combination of Brady and Gronk, it's almost unstoppable.
All right, Matthew. The big news of the offseason was obviously
Tom Brady and Gronk to the Bucs.
I was referring to the tattoo I got of the ESPN fantasy logo. But fine, we'll do your thing. Brady and Gronk to the Bucs. So how does this affect Chris Godwin and Mike Evans?
Well, I like this move for Godwin the most.
It is a caught ball. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. It's been the Chris Godwin show today.
Last season, Chris Godwin was second in slot yards per game, so he could play the Julian Edelman role for Brady in this offense. The Gronk addition hurts Mike Evans a bit more since he relies so heavily on end zone targets.
Caught ball. Evans. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. Fire the cannon.
But honestly, this team could score so much it might not matter. I still have both guys as top 10 wide receivers.
What about Brady and Gronk? What's this do for their value?
Brady takes the snap. Fires it left. Gronk makes the catch. Touchdown, Patriots. What a beautiful throw by TB12.
Look, Brady can still sling it. Before injuries decimated the Patriots' offense last year, Tom Brady had 20 or more fantasy points in five of his first six games last year. And now he's playing under Bruce Arians with as talented a group of wide receivers as he's ever had. And Gronk's back? Yeah, Tom Brady is back to being a top 10 fantasy quarterback. As for Rob Gronkowski, he's a low-end tight end one right now, but with top five upside. With TB12 in town, that Tampa offense is going to be an efficient work of fantasy art.
Hey, just like my tattoos.
Okay, lots of movement this offseason has created some very intriguing quarterback wide receiver tandems. Let's rank them. Marcus, who's on your list going from number five up to number one?
Yeah, my number five is Tom Brady and Mike Evans. And the reason being is because Brady is going to spread the ball around. That's been his career thus far. And he has a lot of weapons on that Tampa Bay team. I think they'll put up great numbers together. But I also think Godwin and O.J. Howard and Rob Gronkowski and Cameron Brate, a lot of guys to get balls on that. Hey, don't trip on this fourth one. Joe Burrow and A.J. Green. The Cincinnati Bengals are going to try to feature their number one draft pick, and A.J. Green is one of the top guys when healthy and playing a full season. I believe they put up big numbers this year in Cincinnati. Third, Dak and CeeDee Lamb. CeeDee takes over that slot spot. Amari Cooper still being the number one. CeeDee will get a lot of one-on-ones. Two, Phillip Rivers and T.Y. Hilton. Great offensive line. Phillip Rivers will be standing there with time. You give time to T.Y., he's going to get open. And my number one guy is Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins. They are going to put up godly numbers this year, and I can't wait to watch them in that Cliff Kingsbury offense.
I got to ask, how can you put Joe Burrow?
This is mine. I just finished watching.
And A.J. Green.
Hang on, Ryan.
Let's play last year. How are you going to put them over Tom Brady and Mike Evans? Joe Burrow said at the combine, don't compare me to Tom Brady. Marcus, I'm shocked. And frankly, I'm a little disappointed. In honor of snacks over everything, I'm going to eat this Oreo while Ryan reads what is surely a better list.
That's my guy. Well, here's my list. Brady to Evans. Brady to Godwin. Brady to Gronk. Just keep going. Brady to Howard. Brady to George Jr. No, I'm just playing. Listen, for me, I mean, that's how they made me feel. So that's how they made me feel. Hey, listen, guys. At number five, I'm going to go Jimmy G and Ayuk. I think Brandon Ayuk is explosive. I got to watch him up close and personal and a lot of home games at Arizona State this year. Then I'm going to go Drew Brees and Emmanuel Sanders. I know this isn't a big one, but when you have Michael Thomas on the other side, we saw what Emmanuel Sanders was able to do at San Francisco. I think he'll be huge there. I agree with Marcus at number three. I got Dak and CeeDee Lamb. At two, that's where I slot Brady and Evans. And with Marcus, my LSU brethren, at number one, Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins. We know how great a player DeAndre Hopkins is, but I also saw the way that Kyler Murray relied on Larry Fitzgerald last year. He believes in those type of proven wide receivers, and he's got one of the best in the league in DeAndre Hopkins.
Boom.
At least you both got number one right.
Or
that's all
we could just
say.
Go to this.
Dan, stop
that's
it.
It's a good Oreo.
And I just have one. I have a serious thing to add, Dan. You don't bring snacks unless you have enough for everyone.
This is also a fact. That is selfish.
Now more than ever, we're one team to help feed those in need.
I accept the all-in challenge. I am very, very happy to be a part of this amazing cause.
I want you to know we're all in this together.
You get to be the leader of the loudest stadium in the NFL.
I'm going to make you and three of your friends part of the coaching staff.
I thought it would be good to give this ring.
Help support those who need it most.
Be all in.
You can still check out the experience with Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs before it closes tomorrow. If you want to participate or if you want to learn more, visit allinchallenge.com. And then there's this mega charity event. Tom Brady and Phil Mickelson square off against Peyton Manning and Tiger Woods in an 18-hole event on Memorial Day weekend that will raise money for COVID-19. As you would imagine, the trash talk is epic.
Manning, Brady, can't deny it.
Typical Peyton Manning making me earn it.
There's been a little trash talk. I'm choosing the Conor McGregor approach.
The tournament had to be in Florida. You know, after Tom's B&E arrest, Tiger and I talked to the sheriff in Tampa. He's going to be allowed to go to Palm Beach.
Always looked up to you because you're older than me.
Right, yeah, still am. Thanks.
I actually thought I was going to be Tiger's partner.
Phil chose the right partner in Tom.
But then Peyton's dad called and switched the teams.
Tom, aren't you tired of beating Peyton?
No.
Yeah, I would have loved to have had this tournament in a place where they don't like Tom very much. Indianapolis, Denver, Boston, you know, after he just betrayed them.
I played with Tom. He didn't have a driver in the bag, so I gave him one of my backup drivers, and that seemed to help him. For their match, the advantage has to be for Tiger and Peyton. I mean, it's Tiger's home course.
I've been studying a lot of film and filming a lot of Peyton's rounds the last couple weeks. So hopefully after Phil and I win, they don't go try to change the rules on us.
Eli is the one that I'm actually happy I'm not playing.
So when Brady said that, I was thinking golf. I wasn't even thinking about this. Super Bowl 42, a minute 16 to go. The Pats' almost perfect season ended like this. Manning to David Tyree, that famous helmet catch. Right, Marcus? And there goes the perfect season.
Perfect season gone. Eli Manning goes down in history. This play is probably going to be solely responsible for getting Eli Manning in the Hall of Fame.
And then in the regular season, 2011 at Gillette, Manning marches down the field, hits Jake Ballard for the game-winning touchdown. Just always seems to have the magic touch. And later always. That season, Super Bowl 46, here Manning threads the needle down the sideline to Mario Manningham, who makes the toe-tapping catch in the clutch, leading the Giants' game-winning drive. Brady.
You know what, Susie?
Yeah.
You know what? Thank goodness for Eli Manning, because we have to sit here and hear people talk about 9 Super Bowls for Tom Brady if it wasn't for Eli Manning. Eli, we appreciate you.
Eli haunts Brady to this day. So really quick, Ryan Marcus, a player that still haunts you. Go ahead, Ryan.
Oh, man. Aaron Rodgers, listen, I just knew we were all set to win our second Super Bowl in 3 years, and Aaron Rodgers was near perfect. I had said I was going to be the MVP, we was going to win it, and we couldn't do anything with him.
Marcus, say the name. Marcus.
Trent Williams. Trent Williams. I'm still recovering from a crackback block.
That's a wrap for us.